Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and what's next. It's a show that asks questions and peels back the layers of our average everyday experience and goes beyond scratching the surface. We interview people doing incredible things who are making a difference around the globe. Join me as we listen in and get one step closer to understanding that big ideas shared create collaboration. Collaboration can inspire community, and communities create social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face. Well, for those of you who have been listening to Face to Face for the past few years, you probably have noticed that I haven't published in quite a while, and there's a reason for that. Part of the reason is that I've published over 600 interviews, I suppose, here at facetofacelive.ca, but also, more importantly, I suppose, because I've been on air. I've been on radio, 640 AM out of Toronto, a show called Toronto Threads. Search that online, Toronto Threads, David Peck. You'll find it. You can download it. You might not be able to listen to it locally on your radio, but it is live, and the show runs every Saturday. It's a weekly show. It's a talk show, 1 hour, and usually get about 42 minutes in of a really good conversation, and I've had some brilliant guests over the past 7 or 8 months and going up, I hope, into a full year as we, I guess, come around that digital corner. And I've got lots of guests booked and coming up in the near future as well. Anyway, I've decided that from time to time I will publish a few interviews, and that's what's about to roll here on Face to Face. And I had the pleasure late in the year, last year, 2023, I was in Cambodia when doing some work with our film, Broken Courage. And if you don't know about that, check it out, brokencouragethemovie.com. You can find out more information about that there. I was in Cambodia, and I've met these two people over the past few years, Master Hun Kemra and Noom Chani. He works in an organization called Kapasa. You're going to hear more about him and from him as well, and Master Hun Kemra. And these are two Buddhists, I guess you could say, two practicing Buddhists who have much to say about living well and about meditation and about daily life and about what it means to live in a community and to be happy and so on. And don't we all have opinions about these things? And so I have 4 episodes, probably about a 2-hour, 2.5-hour conversation by the time we were done. And I'm going to be presenting them as 4 episodes. And who knows, maybe I'll be heading back to the capital city of Cambodia, Phnom Penh, in the not-so-distant future, and I'll be able to extend this conversation. I do hope you're going to enjoy this. I mean, I know you will enjoy it, and you're probably going to want to take some notes. You might even come back to revisit this along the way. But yeah, this is something that's been important to me for many years. We touched on happiness and community and just this idea of living well. And when we first talked about the idea, it was like, well, what does it mean for the East to meet the West? And we I'm not sure we appreciated that dualistic kind of approach to not only finding a title for this mini series, but also just how we stepped into the conversation. I think we're presupposing community. We're presupposing connection with others, and so it was just a real delight to talk with Noom Chani and Master Hun Kemra on Face to Face. So do enjoy it, and we will be back soon with episodes 2 and 3 and 4. Stay tuned. Well, I'm just so thrilled to be here with two, as I've often said before on Face to Face and now on Toronto Threads, two very special guests here with me today. And I mean this and on so many levels. We have Noam Chani here with us. He's going to talk about his organization, Vipassa, and about being a facilitator and a former monk of 16 years, which is a remarkable thing. And Master Hun Kemra is here with us as well to also talk a little bit about, I would think, his history in Cambodia and so on. And if I haven't mentioned it already, which I don't think I have, we are in the heart of Phnom Penh. We are at a restaurant called 11-1 Kitchen in BKK1, and it's, as I said earlier to my two guests, what a pleasure and privilege this really is for me. So thank you to you both. Master Hun Kemra, maybe you could just say hello to our listeners, and we'll get Chani to do the same.
Okay, so hello everyone, and thank you, Mike, for having me, David.
Hello, everyone from Cambodia. Thank you so much, David, for having me here today.
Yeah, it's thanks to you both, and we're going to apologize for a little bit of that background noise. You can probably hear some of that. We're a very busy restaurant, but we're in a room, and you are going to have to visit this restaurant if you ever do get to Phnom Penh. It's a beautiful spot, and the food is terrific, and it's a very it's one of the more sustainable restaurants actually in the city, so you'll have to look them up. Master Hun Kemra, my hope with these podcasts, these interviews, these moments, I guess you could say, in time that we're going to be releasing, we're going to hopefully release a few of them, maybe up to a half a dozen over the next little while. I wanted to tackle some, I guess on some level you could say, very difficult subjects, and maybe on another level not so difficult after all. So I thought we would, you know, take the easy one off the list right out of the gate, as they might say. And I was really hoping we could chat about happiness and happiness from a Western perspective, but I would love the Buddhist sort of take on that, but also your personal take, because I think that's interesting too. You as a Buddhist, but you as a person, and are they one and the same thing? And Chani, for you, you know, 16 years as a monk practicing, still clearly practicing, but not in a formal way, and having stepped now into a corporate world and a nonprofit world and a multilateral world by the sounds of it. So a ton of experience there for us to learn more about. I come from a Western philosophical background, so with an existential bent, which means I really enjoy reading the German and French philosophers, which typically weren't maybe the happiest people in the world. When you start to read people like, you know, Nietzsche and Heidegger and Simone de Beauvoir and Sartre and so on, you would think that, and yet, you would think they're kind of miserable on one hand. But on the other, their whole goal is to empower the human, right?
Right.
Typically, most existentialists would set God aside. They'd set any kind of meaning aside and say the meaning's found, you know, right here today in BKK1. This is what's meaningful, this, right? And I think I would agree with that. They might not say it's a pathway towards happiness. Mm-hmm. And I think I've bent that way. I've leaned that way over the years, where happiness to me almost seems elusive, mm-hmm. or it is elusive, mm-hmm. and it's always this sort of thing that we're looking towards, that we'd like to get to, and so you pursue it through commodities, you know, you through marketing and consumerism, the next thing will bring you happiness and so on. So years ago, I made a distinction between, in my own life, mm-hmm. between happiness and contentment. Anyway, when I think of a Buddhist monk, when I think of Buddhism, somebody practicing Chani for 16 years, I think probably a lot of contentment, or at least that's the hope. That's the desire. So can you maybe define happiness for us from your perspective a little bit, to set, I don't know, some boundaries for us as we step into the... It's a long intro from my perspective, but hopefully that helps to set up the conversation.
Okay, so thank you again. So happiness is a very profound term, and And I don't think that we can put it in a one sentence to make it clear that this is the happiness. So from my understanding is, for me, happiness is the collection of the wholesomeness. It has everything, not only contentment, not only delight or any kinds of positive mentalities, but it has its own stages when it comes to happiness. But from my own experience, I can put it in a very simple term. Happiness for me is about learn to accept things that are out of our control. So this is the first step, that we learn to be happy, because without accepting, with understanding, there is no place for the happiness to arise. So
what's really interesting to me there is it's a practice.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, typically when I think of happiness, I think of a place that I've got to get to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the reality is maybe I'm actually already there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I have to make maybe some conscious choices or take some very specific steps. So
yep.
So that idea of, and Chani, I'd really love to hear your thoughts on this too, as you start to practice your work in a corporate world and a nonprofit mm-hmm. world, but it's a proactive step mm-hmm. towards. Is it a feeling, Master Kim? Is it, or is it a state of mind? You use the word delight as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how many words could we use for happiness in English? And then let's translate those into Khmer as well, right? Like, there's so many different ways, right?
Yeah. So many, like, we can use even tranquility, we can use wisdom, we can use mindfulness, kindness, compassion. So, English, they are like, I can say that they are states of mind.
Yeah.
They are states of mind. So, yeah.
So then it's a sort of a, there is a sense of recognizing that.
Yep. And in another perspective, we can say there are feelings, but so sometimes they move beyond, they are beyond feelings.
Chani, when you've been in, having been a monk, I think you bring a very interesting perspective to any kind of conversation around feelings or choices, responsibility, all of these things, because you've spent so much time in a practice, a very specific meditative, practice, and now you've stepped into a completely different world. And the hope, I would imagine, and the goal is to bring those together and integrate them, I would think, in some ways. Is that true? And I'd love to hear more about that, and how might that connect to this idea of happiness for you?
It is true. And to me, I think, because in a very complete different world, when I was a Buddhist monk, I would see happiness in a different level. But when come back to a corporate world, and living with normal life, the happiness could mean different thing. But the fact is, happiness is something, it's not based on material, it's not based on what we believe, but actually it is a very proactive process, process. What I mean, it is something that we cannot just talk, but something that we need to open up and really understand what we call inner connected. We learn how to really understand our own emotion, our own mind, because, through my work, I would see that and I experienced that a lot of people try to run after the happiness and forget to enjoy the happiness already there. what I mean, because we're busy to run after material, we probably believe that this is going to make us happy, but actually the happiness is already here, but we don't take chance to be fully absorbed. We don't take chance to be fully understand that it's already here, because happiness being content, and also I would say when we are in content process, and also waking up, being grateful to life, to family, to environment around, and to those who help us, could also generate happiness within as well. Because when I was a Buddhist monk, you know, living in a temple, we live as community. We share everything, the food, the place we stay, accommodation, almost everything. But come back to a normal world, you need to work hard to achieve those in order to live a better life. But I, you know, that's why I would say many people are confusing between success and happiness. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they believe that achieving something is happiness. No, it's just a different level of being success, that said, I achieve this, I'm happy. If I buy a bottle of wine for $500, or if I buy a bag cost $10,000, probably I'm happy. But that's not happiness, because happiness is something from within, not just you have a commodity or material to replace the inner happy. So being happy, to me, that I understand as a normal person, understand that I truly believe that through practicing meditation, through practicing the present moment, then we can feel more happy, we can feel more enjoy, because a lot of time we probably spend time to think a lot about the past. We regret, we worry about the past, and then we feel anxious about the future, but we forget to enjoy the present moment.
So good. So regret,
yeah,
worry, anxiety. I mean, these are all things. I'm hoping in one of our other talks we're going to touch on mental health issues. I mean, we can do that here in this one as well. Mm-hmm. But it makes me wonder, I mean, aren't all these things really connected anyway in some
it
way,
is very connected.
Right?
Yeah.
They're all interconnected. And so many things there that you said, Joni, that I want to touch on. You talked about generating happiness. You talked about sharing everything in commodities. I also like your comment about how when a normal person does this. So I guess the question there is pursuing a life in Buddhism, is that a normal thing to do? Master Hun Kemra, maybe you can answer that. Or is this something only for a select group of people, in your opinion?
Do you mean happiness, right?
Well, I mean, pursuing a life as a Buddhist monk, you know, at 20, 16 years of it. And I mean, it's an interesting question for me coming from the West. You could look at, I don't love the analogy but or the comparison, but the Western church. Let's look at the Western church or the Christian model. I would say the church is slowly being eroded by things like, you know, postmodernism and people's approach and individualism, and frankly, I think a very poor kind of model that the church was built on, actually, when you start to unpack it philosophically. But it's kind of disintegrating, and I think in 10, 20, 30 years, I think what we're going to see is a very different world. I don't know if that's happening with Buddhism or if Buddhism is actually growing, but the sense is this. Chani talked about the meditation and about the practicing of the presence of it. You know, a Catholic might say we need to practice the presence of God. Mm-hmm. To me, that's practicing the presence of the holiness of the moment. Right. Anyway, I was just kind of having a little bit of fun at Chani's expense there when he said, but is it normal? Is it normal to push everything else aside to pursue one goal like you have done with your life?
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Okay, so to my mind, we have our own, I call it ingrained dispositions. We have different personalities. So from Buddhist perspective, in the pursuit of the real happiness in terms of enlightenment, you have your own journey. And the spirituality can be built up on different dispositions, personalities, so you can choose their own way. But either way, it depends on you. Like monks, even we say monks, if we don't know the real way, we try understanding to reach the highest level of well-being, sometimes we are worse than the normal person, you know? But the metaphor is, we are enjoying more freedom, but we have more responsibilities. Less freedom means we have less attachments, because we are not that much concerned with the family members, with the relatives, but our concentration is more on the community. It is our huge responsibility that we must share the teachings to the people who are suffering from, I call it suffering, mental suffering, sadness, anxiety, depression, and so on. So from that perspective, I think we bear the same responsibilities, okay? And monks life have more, I don't use the word more, but it's like, yeah, have more responsibilities when it comes to, promoting mental well-being. And we sacrifice more, I would like to say, but the same journey, because he has, normal person, you have to take care of your family, your wife, your children, and at the same time, you have to focus on the well-being of the community. But we spend, our entire life for that. So our family members are a part of that community. We don't separately focus them. We don't, specially or distinguishly, okay, this is my family, this is the community. No, we have to lead them to the same path, to the same goal. So from that perspective, I think for me, we have more challenges. I mean, from my own experience, because we have to be responsible to the family, to the high priest, to the monks, to the people. And at the same time, we have to be accountable to our rules and regulations. And he had experience, because when he's a normal person, the burden is the family. In terms of economy, but we have to regulate our emotions and to push ourselves ahead. And at the same time, we have to, we have to observe, we have to protect our rules and regulations as monk. He has 5, I have 277. So from that perspective,
that's a lot of rules and regulations.
Yeah, it's tough to differentiate that, which one is more burdensome. I mean, from that term, I want to say that we have more responsibility, he has more responsibility.
So, and I'm just going to say this out loud now, there is no way we're going to get, in 4 or 6 episodes, are we ever going to cover the stuff I would so love to cover. I mean, just already the notes I've made, to our listeners out there, just remarkable. I mean, just the notion of you've used the phrase well-being many times. You've talked so much about the community, and the 277 rules I find fascinating, that there's so many for you to have to... they're like milestones, I guess.
Yeah.
And yet, Chöni, you have 5. Is that more for the sort of the practicing Buddhist in living in a more normal life? We'll use the word normal. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. What's the Khmer translation for normal?
Thomada.
Okay.
Jivat Thomada.
And how would you now translate that into English? Would you use the word normal, or would you want to talk about it a little bit more?
Sometimes we call normal, sometimes we live in a simple world, because consider to a Buddhist community, we call a higher world in terms of spirit, in terms of value. So for us as a normal people, as a lay people, we live because we associate with family, we associate with business, we associate with all of this living life. But for them, live in a higher world in terms of spirit, in terms of building a part for well-being of other people, not just themselves, but they try to create a community where they can help support for the well-being of others around the community. That's why it's very complete different, because just to trace back a little bit on my history, when I was a Buddhist monk, after I left the temple, first three months live a normal life as a lay person like you, it was quite hard, very hard. I don't know what to trace. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of things, because it's like I start a new life. I born again, because I was like,
which is
I,
a funny use of that phrase, by the way.
Like born again, like I went to the temples and I was very young at the young age, and then I spent my youth in the temple, you know. So only 2010, I left the temple and became a normal life, and that what it mean. I was born in 2010 to learn a new normal life. Yeah.
Yeah, born again in 2010. That,
yeah.
You could put that on your name card. that could become your slogan.
Yeah, because I truly believe, you know, my life as a monk was already dead. So I passed away from a monk's life. But there was a lot
so
of...
So was it really important for you, and is that a part of the practice, to say 16 years of my life, building blocks, foundation, I've now left that behind, you just used the word death, and this truly is a new life?
It is.
And is that, again, is that a mind and a heart thing, would you say, or is it an intellectual kind of a distinction?
To me, you know, through my understanding, my practice of Buddhism for many years, and I believe this is not just intellectual, but very high intellectual when you can say that, because the Buddha taught us that, you know, we should reflect on our death every day. The more we reflect on that, the more we become happier, the more we not afraid of being died. So like you know, in to put in a real simple way, we are now talking now, three of us having conversation now. After this, we will die from today, then we start a new life somewhere else. Let's say, now today we talk here, but tomorrow, then we pass away from here, then we born again tomorrow. So even we come here again tomorrow, and then everything will change. It won't be the same. That's why it's so important being content. It's so important enjoying the process of the present moment. That's called happiness.
Chani, I was just gonna say that sounded to me like you were defining being in the moment. You were actually defining being present. It's the yesterday, it's the past, it's behind me. It is time to move on, but so you're sort of looking into the future, but you are actually looking at it from here, right now, what's happening, you're present. I don't know if that made any sense at all, but...
I am, and it made sense in many ways, because one of the master monks of Cambodia, Mahakos Nanda, he say, present is the mind of the future. If you want to build a great future, let's take care of the present world. When we take care of the mind of present world, then the future will be better. So the Buddha also taught us not to forget about the past, but to learn about the past, to learn about what's already gone, and not to think about the past and then we feel regret or feel not happy about it, but use those past as a lesson learned to craft for a better future by putting more effort into the present moment. If we cannot live a life now, I am for sure we cannot build a better future. Like here, when I'm talking with you, my whole body, my whole mind is with you here right now, because my whole present is here. I'm focusing here right now. I don't distract myself to think of different agenda. I'm just here to be with you, David and Master Camara.
So Master and Camara, I would love to hear if, and I think our next, we're gonna have to wrap up in a couple minutes, but our next part of the series, I wanna talk a little bit more about maybe some of those 277 rules that apply to you maybe more than they apply to me, and yet clearly I think there are clues there. There are maybe ways forward for all of us to be able to draw from that, because, and I think what one of the things that draws me to a Buddhist philosophy is the discipline of it, and that's partially my personality. You know, let's do a job, let's do it right, and move on to the next thing. And I'm not, we got to finish this one, get it done right, and then move on. Maybe that's a little similar to what you were saying, Chani, about how it's finished, it's died. Okay, now what's next? But unfortunately for me, it's more about a to-do list. Okay, great, I'm done. Boom, I can move on to the next thing. Boom, I can move on to the next thing. Because I think there's always this satisfaction of accomplishing something, not because I'm present, but because I'm getting it done, and it ultimately makes me feel maybe more whole, maybe more human, maybe more successful, right? And I'm not sure it's any of those things, because I think there's something, I think there's something dysfunctional about always living in the future. So anyway, I would love to hear about, you know, this building a better future, taking care of the present, because clearly happiness, to bring us back to our first question, is about being present. It's about being in the moment. Might be a state of mind. We've talked a little bit about emotions. We have this aspect of discipline and practice. Any more clues before we just wrap on some of the things Chani said about the normal lifestyle versus the Buddhist lifestyle?
Okay, so what I want to share, if we want to help others, we have to help ourselves. And if we want to train others to experience the real happiness, we have to train ourselves. So as you mentioned, discipline is a part of happy life. So 227, those are the rules for training our behavior, verbally, physically, and mentally. So in order to train, devotees to be happy, we have to check ourselves whether we can go through that or not. That's very important. Because we have to be strong, we have to be disciplined. And those are the, for me, are the, determinant factors, how strong you are to get through the difficulties. Because when it comes to the happiness, people mostly expect only about the comfort zone. They never train themselves to be happy or to be patient or tolerate themselves with the difficult zone, like difficulties, downs, bad reputation, business, no business, and on, and so on. And the second point is, I forgot what to say. About the happiness, okay. And being at the present moment. I think this is the most complicated theme that I have been exploring. I want to know, because it has been used from different philosophical background. Even in Christianity, even in Islam, even in Hinduism, and even from different philosophers, they say, being at the moment. The question is how? That's the question, being at the moment. But I want to share this. Yes, according to the discourse, it is called Bhaddekarata Sutta. Buddha stresses that don't chase after the past, don't expect about the future, be at the moment. But from that perspective, Buddha wants to say is, don't think about the past, that you were this, you did that, in terms of, you know, bad things, and attach to the past and make you anxious or depressed, and not worry about the future is because we overthink. This will happen, this happened to me, this will, you know, kinds of complicated thoughts arise. So Buddha said, no, nothing about that. But being at the moment here is, but okay, but reflecting on the past and reflecting on the future are allowed in Buddhism. But in terms of checking your thoughts, checking your words, and on and so on. So in one discourse, he said, before you are doing anything, you have to plan. You have to plan well before you are doing anything. While you are doing, you have to plan well. You have to be aware of what you are doing. And after doing, you have to reflect. Understand what I'm saying? Reflect that. Did this wrong? It is right. So in terms of that, it is allowed to think about the past, about the present, about the future. But the intention is very important. Try not to worry, not to be anxious, not to be depressed and frustrated is the point. So the aspiration is very important when it comes to being at the present moment.
Is it like, just before we wrap up here on this section of our, you know, our larger conversation, is it kind of like creating an event? So think of a wedding or a funeral or maybe in my case a big magic show, let's say, and you spend weeks preparing for it. You're thinking about it, you're planning, and then the moment comes, you've done all that work, you got to stay with the event. You enjoy it, you celebrate it, you applaud, you take part in the rituals, etc. Then once it's passed, you now reflect to say, how could maybe the next one be maybe more meaningful? Those kinds of things, which I would imagine is difficult because at that point you can get critical and all these other things. But I, just as you were talking about that, because I'm glad to hear you say that, you know, it's important to reflect. It's important to plan, but you also have to be there as well. That's something I need to hear. And I would imagine lots of listeners as well. We all need to be reminded. I spend a lot of time in the past and a lot of time in the future worrying about how this person's going to reflect. What if we don't get that? The what if, you know? Yeah. The what if is really big. And I love that you said the question is how. So tell you what, let's wrap this part of our conversation up. I still can't believe we have, you know, we're almost 30 minutes in and we've, I mean, like any great conversation, there's always more to say, but we have barely scratched the surface. So we will come back in our next section. And I think we're just gonna talk maybe a little bit more about the how. Thank you, Chani and Master Hung Camera. Thank you for joining me on this episode.
Well, there you have it. Thank you for joining us on Face to Face. Again, this is episode one of a four-part episode, a mini-series about Buddhism and about happiness and about community and about living well. Thanks for joining us here on Face to Face. My name is David Beck.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.